Welcome to the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, what a week at the Players' Championship. Jason Day solidified his hold on number one. Jordan Spieth, as well as Ricky Fowler, didn't make the cut, and Rory McIlroy was up and down like a yo-yo. Let's talk about the Players' Championship, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go, and we have our very important guest of the week. It's Ron Green Jr., that very great, good friend of the show, senior writer for Global Golf Post. He's going to help us out with our VIG, talking about also about the Players and a little bit about his article yesterday about whether Jason Day has separated himself from the Big Three. We'll discuss that later, but let's start right away. Players. We have to talk about Players? Yes, we have to talk about the Players. And Fred, tell us a little bit about it to open the weekend backspin with it.
Well, Carlos, just like that great golfer, Chucky Dickens wrote in 1859, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. The best golfers in the world had a ton of fun on Thursday and Friday at TPC Sawgrass, but not so much on Saturday. The first 2 days of the Players' Championship was completely different from what we saw on the weekend. Jason Day started hot, with a 9-under par 63 on Thursday to tie the course record, and kept the momentum going all 4 days to capture his first Players' Championship trophy and his seventh win in his last 17 starts. He announced at the press conference after his win that he is intent on widening the gap between himself and whoever's number two, plus challenging Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson's career numbers. Jordan Spieth returned to work after his most excellent spring break adventure, but did not impress, missing the cut. The other member of the Big Three, Rory McIlroy, made the cut but had an up-and-down week that included a 29 on his front nine, which was the back nine on Friday, and made a mess of his final hole, which was number nine, or he would have broken the course record with a 61 or 62. Instead, he could only manage a par, which tied the course record. Speaking of course records, Colton Knost had his shot at setting a new one, but he three-putted on 18 on Friday to tie Day and McIlroy at 63. TPC Sawgrass was in perfect shape, plus the winds were down, allowing record-low scoring on both Thursday and Friday. There were some notable missed cuts, including defending champ Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, as we mentioned, Phil Mickelson, and Masters champ Danny Willett. Maybe Ricky was distracted by his neon yellow and red shoes. Carlos, will we see you sporting those new Nike style that Rory and Ricky are wearing?
Not anytime soon. Not anytime soon.
Wilcox recorded the first hole-in-one on number 17 in the last 6,300 shots there. Miguel and Angel Jimenez hold the last one in 2002, nearly 15 years ago. Justin Rhodes made three doubles on the back nine on Saturday, but came back with a tidy 66 on Sunday. Rhodes is playing well right now. Watch for him in the U.S. Open, Carlos. The greens were firm, but fair the first 2 days. TPC Sawgrass may be the most unfair, fair golf course in the world today. Birdies are available, but if you miss your target by just a few yards, disaster awaits. When Saturday dawned, the 76 players that made the cut were in for a very different scenario than what had played out over the first 2 days. More wind, no humidity, plus greens that were double cut and rolled, as well as evil pin positions, made TPC Sawgrass nearly unplayable. It was also rumored they even ran the sub-air system on Friday night. Greens were completely dried out and hard as your mother-in-law's heart. There was a 530-stroke difference from Friday to Saturday. From 230 under par for 144 golfers to 300 over par for only 76 golfers, and with only half the number. So unbelievable. On Thursday and Friday, with 100, On Thursday and Friday, with 144 golfers, there were 122 three-putts. On Saturday alone, there were 149 three-putts by the 76 golfers. Sergio Garcia even had a five-putt, well, really a six-putt, if you count his first effort from just on the fringe. Question for you, Carlos. What was harder to watch, Ernie Els's six-putt at Augusta or Sergio's five-putt plus one from the fringe at the Players on Saturday?
That's too difficult to say. I mean, both are right there. I can't separate.
The third round average on Saturday was 75.59, but veteran 47-year-old Ken Duke managed a superb 65, which Johnny Miller called the round of the year on the PGA Tour. After 54 holes, Day held a five-shot lead with a mixed leaderboard, set to make a run at him. Lowry, Blixt, Cheka, Tringali, Weekly, Nost, Molinari, Kelly, and Woodland. Not your high-profile, household names. The question, which one of these guys was going to run down number one, Jason Day, with a four-shot lead? The answer, nobody. Jason Day is a clear number one right now. But I'm not counting out Jordan and Rory being contenders at Oakmont, Troon, and Baltusrol just yet. We're going to talk more about Jason Day and the Big Three and the Ron Green Jr. interview later in the show, so I'll save the rest for then, Carlos. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, I just want to mention just one person that everybody's like passing by, and I think is worth mentioning, and that's that Jim Furyk. You know, if you might remember, he made his PGA return two Thursdays ago at the Wells Fargo Championship. He shot a 1-over-73 there in Quail Hollow, and what was his first competitive round since September. He followed that with a 75 and missed a cut, but there was an improvement of sorts there at the Players. While he didn't take advantage Thursday and Friday at TPC Sawgrass, just going just three under, you know, on the bloodbath that was Saturday, as you just mentioned, he went three over to be even going into Sunday, and then he went two under Sunday. So, you know, some may say that it was because he knows that course so well because he's don't go well. Let me tell you one thing. Well, it might be true that he lives like within a driver and a five iron from TPC Sawgrass. His time on the road doesn't allow him to be that familiar with the stadium course. So it was a great achievement to see him play okay. He's returning back from that injury and the surgery, but more than anything else, getting back into that fiery competitor that he is, I have missed seeing him on the course, and it's great to see him back there playing and playing good. I mean, he has to improve, but hey, he's back finally. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Web.com Tour. And before playing Sunday in their professional golf tournaments, Justin Thomas and Trey Mullinex, they exchanged texts of encouragement. Afterwards, Thomas carded a 7-under par 65 in the final round of the PGA Tour Players Championship to grab a third-place finish on Sunday. And Mullinex, he charged from within five strokes down, entering the back nine to win the Rex Hospital Open on Sunday, his first victory on the Web.com Tour. Thomas and Mullinex both played on Alabama's 2013 NCAA Championship team, and Mullinex was around for the Crimson Tide's NCAA title in 2014, too. As a prep standout at Gardendale, Mullinex put himself in a strong position to join Thomas on the PGA Tour in the 2016-17 season. As you all know, the top 25 golfers on the Web.com Tour at the end of the season earned playing privilege on the PGA Tour, and Mullinex's payday of $117,000 on Sunday has vaulted him to fourth on this year's money list. He finished at 14 under for the tournament at TPC Wakefield Plantation in Raleigh, North Carolina. He closed with a 3-under 68, even though he played the front nine in two over on Sunday. That's how good that back nine was for him. He birdied the first three holes on the back nine and chipped in for an eagle on the 15th to charge to a two-stroke victory over Brady Schnell. So, Fred, any other words you may have before we close the backspin and move on to our par 5 news?
No, I can't wait to get to the interview with Ron Green. That was great. And we're going to talk about Jason Day in our practice range. So I'm gonna abstain and push everything back, defer everything to there.
Don't worry, there's still half an hour more that Fred has for us to talk about the players. So don't worry, you are gonna have all of it. So don't worry. Let's take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to have our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at eDraftSports and on Facebook at facebook.com/eDraftSports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, you're going to open up talking about the PGA Tour, LPGA, and Top Golf. What's going on between them?
Well, Top Golf is just taking the world by storm everywhere it lands. And, of course, strategic alliances seem to be all the rage in the golf world right now. As you know, we have the LPGA, PGA Tour Strategic Alliance, and now PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finchem, LPGA Commissioner Michael Wan have joined together with Top Golf to create another partnership that will hopefully bring their tours closer to a bigger audience. Top Golf CEO Eric Anderson outlined four primary areas of focus during a press conference at TPC Sawgrass, site of this week's Players Championship. The alliance plans to focus on the following: linking PGA Tour and LPGA tournament activities to local Top Golf venues. So when you're in a city, you know, they're going to trot some of the players out and put on a clinic, do some stuff at the Top Golf, the local Top Golf there. Reciprocal distribution of content from both tours through Top Golf platforms. This gets a little bit more complicated. They're also going to grow the game initiative supported by Top Golf venues. So, you know, hopefully some dollars will trickle down to junior golf and bringing in women to golf and some other segments. And then the last thing is exploring opportunities for PGA Tour and LPGA related experience on the World Golf Tour digital game. So here is where the PGA Tour and the LPGA is kind of entering the world of gaming, if you will. So, you know, maybe that's probably the biggest thing in the package. Yeah, they can do some stuff back and forth, you know, with the local Top Golf stuff. And Top Golf is attracting a lot of people to it, but I think the gaming probably is the attractive piece for the tours. Finchem said, "We see tremendous collaborative opportunities that will benefit not only Top Golf, the PGA Tour, and LPGA, but golf as a whole. We're very excited to work with Eric's team to bring these ideas to life through this new alliance." Top Golf, an entertainment center focused around the game of golf, currently has 21 locations open in the U.S., with another six that'll be ready open in 2016. Just got a press release where they just opened the one in Las Vegas. So if you're going to Vegas, you can check one out there. Top Golf's research indicates that there are millions of their guests who do not play golf but have an interest in learning the traditional green grass game. So this is what Finchem was referring to when he says, you know, we're reaching out and maybe have an initiative to bring other people into the game. That's what they're looking at, because Top Golf gets people, you know, there for dinner, on dates. They get people that have never played before, but they'll go out and take a few swings, so maybe they'll get hooked and want to try some golf. So, Carlos, if you link this story to what you're going to report on next, the PGA and the LPGA Tours are positioning themselves to break away from mainstream media and kind of go it alone.
Oh, yes, they are, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that pretty soon. So let me start by saying, that's a good thing to do. I mean, it's not the same as playing in the golf course, but, hey, that's what you just want. You just want people to get some interest in what golf is all about, and, hey, maybe if you can get even 10% of what Top Golf is getting as new golfers, hey, it's going to be good for the game.
So you know, Carlos, it's kind of interesting. Uh-huh. To me that David Ogren, who we both follow, who is an ex-PGA Tour player, who's a teaching pro now in the San Antonio area, is working for Topgolf, giving lessons and working there. And he had been sending some things out to the PGA of America to maybe get involved and do some partnerships with Topgolf, and nothing had come of that. And here all of a sudden, PGA Tour and LPGA jump in there with their collaboration. And, you know, so now maybe the door is closed, you know, with the USGA. Well, the USGA, they'd be way too stuffy for Topgolf. Oh, my goodness, that would never work. But PGA, you know, that might have been a nice fit for them, because they hire Topgolf, hires teaching pros to come in and work with their people and organize and direct the golf services. And that could have been a nice fit. But, you know, again, the tour jumped in there. So, you know, they kind of maybe got one up. You know, Topgolf's going to – they see a lot of people through their facility. So they see a lot of people. So I see this as a good thing for both tours, Carlos.
Definitely. Totally agree. Hey, Jeff Shackelford, he reported that Cameron Morphy talked to a few folks about the challenges facing likely incoming commissioner Jay Monahan. In the short term, Morphy outlined how Miami, Trump, and the WGC figure to be a huge matter, as will FedEx in 2017, if Commissioner Reset isn't able to secure a new deal before he hands over his NetJets card. But as he outlined in a few posts, the tour seems to be building some leverage with television networks for the next deal with various media ventures. Morphy's reporting suggests that what he suspected, the tour is operating with a bit of a chip on its shoulder for having been out-negotiated by Comcast when signing for 15 years to be on the Golf Channel exclusivity with no out clause. Even as the network takes on the money losing leftovers like the Web.com and Champion Tours. Joe Ogilvie, a former tour pro who manages money at the Dallas-based fund Wallace Capital, was on the policy board when the tour's 15-year deal with Golf Channel was announced in 2006, and says Monahan will have to shore up the main TV deal, which he says is costing players money. Ogilvie's assessment is based on the recent sports television deals, specifically the 12-year Fox USGA pact, which has been said to be worth around $100 million a year when it was announced in 2013. He says that the tour left around $700 million to $1 billion on the table when it did the deal with Golf Channel, and there has been astronomical growth since then. And with 2020 hindsight, Comcast got a sweetheart deal. Tim Fincham went for what was saved, and you can't fault him for that. I mean, pray that 2020 hindsight. I mean, the deal got all early rounds on TV, which, as Shackelford recalls, was a pretty big deal and has been sensational for the players. But no one could have seen right fees going the way they did, so the tour has nothing to be bitter about except that the rights craze may be subsiding, and networks like ESPN and Fox are likely not going to be bidding anymore on golf. So that also, we have to tie it in with some other news from Jeff, who reports that in a paywall-protected story from John Lombardo and Joe Noren, saying that the PGA Tour now it's exploring the creation of its own channel and is considering opting out of its CBS-NBC contract for a new deal commencing in 2019, has gauged whether ESPN, Turner, Fox are interested in bidding such contract, and is even floating ways to force a renegotiation in its locked-in, no-out deal with Golf Channel through 2021 that would give them the equity in the Comcast-owned channel or allow other networks to carry early round coverage. You know, there's a lot of things that you can take from that story. He also says that maybe Tim Fincham, who, you know, he's on his way out right now, and he likes to do the deals, and he's been the responsible part for all the TV deals and all that. He would like to get one last hooray and get this one. But there's a problem, because he's now interjecting for Jay Monahan, who should be negotiating this when he comes in, and he should be talking about the problem that is becoming the digital television. You know, there should be, as we all know, cable TV is going to it's not going to be the same in 3 to 4 years. Everything is moving towards digital TV, and that's an impending thing that Monahan should have had the chance to fully try to shape that next TV deal. But if Fincham steps in, well, as he says, he loves to make deals. It's always that he's quite good at it. But he seems consumed with filling his coffers and solidifying that FedEx Cup calendar year model. And maybe he wants to get a little bit back from what is there. But there's a problem. If you're going to do that, then how are you going to counter then and say to Comcast and to Turner and every other cable company to carry out your channel and your broadcast when you just took them out of the game, Fred?
Yeah, Comcast is they're a pretty big gorilla in the room.
They're the biggest one yeah. in the whole U.S. So
you don't want to piss those guys off too much. But here's the deal. Just like you said, TV is going to be changing so much in the next 5 years. You need to get out your crystal ball. I really think a PGA Tour channel, LPGA Tour channel, when Arnold Palmer started the Golf Channel, everybody thought he was nuts, it'll never go. There's not a way. No, people aren't going to pay for that. It's not. Well, guess what? They did. It's been very successful. One of the biggest success stories of all on cable television. And Carlos, I come back to the fact that there's a reason that when you watch a golf tournament on TV, guess what the advertisements are? Cadillac, BMW, Rolex watches. You know what? The people that watch golf on TV have the money to buy that stuff. They're not the low income household wife that watches soap operas on weekday afternoons. Okay, so there's a market out there to carry golf. All they have to do is decide the best medium. Now, if they're going to go it alone and start their own company, their own production company, and have their own channel, that's a whole different ball game. I know there's people out there that can do that and run that for them and make that work. But again, it's taking a risk. Can you get the advertising? You got to have people to sell the advertising. You got to get guys to buy it. It's a whole different ball game than just saying, okay, TV, here's our product. What are we going to do? What's our next deal? So there's a lot of questions, but I think, Carlos, to answer your point there too, I think Moynihan is sitting in on every decision, and he signs off on whatever Fincham's saying. I think they're working close enough together. I don't think Fincham's doing anything that Moynihan's not going to be comfortable with.
Okay, so, hey, that's what I got from that. What did you have for us from Jordan Spieth and a Caddy charity event? What's going on with Jordan?
Well, Carlos, I was talking on Mark Croft's show earlier today, and I was saying, I made the point that, these young guys, I they're great golfers, and they're it's fun to watch them play and win. Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth, but they're good guys, especially Spieth. World number two, Jordan Spieth, had taken some very much needed time away from golf prior to the start of the Players' Championship last week. So it was expected that he may not be at his best and miss the cut. But he was still at his very best off the course, Carlos, when he took time to stop by an event arranged by the First Tee of Jacksonville, which involved PGA Tour caddy Paul Tesori. Tesori has been a longtime caddy to Webb Simpson, as well as his best friend and coach. The Tesoris have a special needs child, and Tesori's foundation provides needed money for families with special needs kids. Tesori said of Spieth's appearance at the event, "It's the type of guy he is." Spieth told a group of people, "Whatever I can do," he told a small gathering, "I know it's a very small world, that it's a very tight-knit world." He was telling parents and friends why he had accepted an invitation to stop by and visit with a group of special needs children on behalf of the Tesori Family Foundation, and in particular, Tesori's son, Isaiah. He's a 2-year-old son, and his wife, Michelle, if anyone knows the joy of Isaiah, will provide It's Spieth. His younger sister Ellie was born with a neurological disorder on autism spectrum. Witnesses to the interaction between Jordan and Ellie wouldn't hesitate to say the image far outshines anything involving the green jacket or any U.S. Open trophy that Spieth won last year during that fantastic year he had last year. Spieth spoke to the children, then hit some golf balls and lined up for some photographs. The entire time, the two-time major winner looked comfortable. He appeared to sense what the children wanted of him, showed great patience, and soon the highlight of the day for the children, the chance to hit balls on the range or roll putts on the practice green. So Spieth mingled with a few parents, talked to a local TV reporter, then made his way to his car. He still had the golf tournament to get ready for. It was a short visit, yes, but it had a lasting impression. He didn't have to do this, DeSori said, but that's just who he is. It was really cool of him. It means a lot to us. Jordan Spieth didn't make the cut this week and went home early, but he continues to win big off the golf course, Carlos.
He definitely is a winner on and off the court and off the field. And wow, what a gesture from him. And that just lets you know what kind of a human being Jordan Spieth is. And, you know, since you mentioned him and a caddy, you know, the final pairing on Sunday at Augusta is what everybody involved in professional golf dreams of. That's true not just for players, but also their caddies, as Buffalo, New York native Aaron Alpern can attest to. The 38-year-old found himself in that very spot last month when he was on the back for PGA Tour rookie Smiley Kaufman during the Masters. It was Alpern's first trip to the Masters, and what a memorable one at that. Not only did Kaufman make the final pairing, he played alongside world number one Jordan Spieth. Alpern's journey to Augusta began about a year ago when he was between jobs, and based on a tip from a veteran caddy, Bobby Brown, he hooked up with Kaufman, who at the time was playing on the Work.com Tour. In their first event together, the United Leasing Championship, Kaufman won by 5 shots. He ultimately finished 6th on the Web.com Tour money list to win his PGA Tour card. Then in his second event, the Shriners Hospital for Children in October, he shot a final round of 61 to win. That secured his invitation to the Masters and cemented Kaufman's status as one of the game's rising stars. Alpern, who played in high school at Nichols in Buffalo and once advanced to the quarterfinals in the International Junior Masters, said that after getting to the field, he accompanied Kaufman on 2 scouting trips to Augusta. Simply seeing it on TV, however, didn't adequately prepare him for his first trip down Magnolia Lane. In the days leading up to Thursday's first round, Alpern logged long hours on the course, learning its nuances, and Kaufman made his move on Saturday with a 3-under-69 that included 3 birdies on the back nine, which earned him the spot in that coveted final pairing with Jordan Spieth. Unfortunately, that day didn't go as planned for either player. Kaufman's putting stroke betrayed him on the way to the disappointing 81. As the round progressed, Alpern and Kaufman tried to work on diagnosing the problem. So in that sense, the round was just like any other. It just happened to be happening on the golf's grandest stage. Of course, it wasn't Kaufman, the only person who struggled on Sunday. As you might remember, Spieth's quest for a second straight Masters title met its end on the iconic par 3 12th hole when he hit 2 balls into Ray Creek and eventually made a quadruple bogey 7. And Alpern had an up-close view of Spieth's collapse and came away impressed with how he handled it. In fact, as they reached the 13th tee, Spieth even managed to crack a joke, asking Kaufman, hey, who made birdie number 12, who had the honors? For those watching closely at home, Alpern's hometown pride was on display there at the Masters. The top of the Sabres t-shirt could be seen under his traditional white caddy's bib. Fred, I think that experience certainly is one that neither one of them will forget anytime soon, and they can only grow from it.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, it's just an experience for anybody that goes there, a golf fan, you know, a casual fan, whatever. When you go there, it's just so off the charts to be there, and you don't appreciate for the golfers. It's the same way, you know, and the caddies, they know they're walking among history. They know they're walking where the best have won. You know, they know it's a major championship, and so it's a big deal for them too. So. Yeah, I saw that story. I thought that was kind of cool. So, hey, Carlos, the Players' Championship, you know, we're all about that this week. You know, we remember we talked about Berkman's place at Augusta National, the 90,000 square foot, $75 million hospitality tent. Well, it's not really a tent, it's a building, that offers only the finest in service, food, and drink to patrons that pony up a minimum of $10,000 per ticket for a minimum of 6 tickets to the Masters patrons. The finest chefs prepare the food, the best wines, as well as service befitting a captain of industry or finance are available for the right price. Well, the Players' Championship took note of what the Masters accomplished with Berkman's and developed their own extravaganza for the well-heeled golf fan. A shiny new hospitality ticket called the Players Club provides a super premium experience not previously available during tournament week at TPC Sawgrass. Among the accoutrements at one's disposal inside the 70,000 square foot clubhouse are an endless array of five-star food, bottomless adult beverages, access to a manicurist and concierge, a $500 merchandise credit, and you can chat up anyone from Commissioner Tim Fincham or former Commissioner Dean Beaman or maybe NBC analyst Gary Koch, a rules official. You got a rules question? They'll take care of it. And all this only going to cost you, Carlos, a cool $5,000. Although not yet up to the numbers of takers that frequent Berkman's at the Masters, nearly 1,000 per day, the Players Club only counted a few hundred each day, but it is a new venture and will undoubtedly grow as time passes. At the end of the day, the experience of the Players Club is something akin to Millionaire's Row at the Kentucky Derby or the Royal Box at Wimbledon or, again, Berkman's Place. It's all for the affluent golf fan, not the mere hacker of a more common heritage like you and me, Carlos. That wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashwood, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available with discount coupons for huge savings. They not only have an excellent product line, they offer everything the golf nut wants, needs, can ever get, and they do it at a discount. You can join the director's program, and it's like having your own pro shop. You're buying stuff at a discount like at wholesale. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And that will wrap up our weekend backspin. Before we move on to our VIG thread, I have here a point that I just found out. I just passed it by. I just wanted to ask you, Tiger Woods, he was at the Quicken Loans there at Congressional, and he talked about he's not ready to, he doesn't know when he's going to come back and all that, and we saw that. But there was one thing that we saw, and we're going to call it the Splashgate, three times. You know, the sponsors there gave him a ball just to do a ceremonial chip from the front of the front tees. It wasn't from the back. It was just 100-something short, 122 yards to put it on the green, and he splashed it three times. The first one, it was right in the water. The second one hit the bankroll, and it went down, and the third one almost made the green, but it also rolled back. And, you know, it was painful to watch as well. And you can see him when he was going to hit it from the second to the third time. You can hear him saying, come on, Tiger, come on. It was like he has lost. I mean, I think he has lost so much confidence in himself, his mental game. I don't know. I can't see him. Oh, my God, Fred, I don't know what's your take on that. But to me, is it a big deal? Is it a small deal? Is it nothing that he missed those three things, see him that way? I just don't see him. He's still struggling, I think, more in his mind that he's gonna struggle physically. So I don't know. To me, it was painful to watch what happened there.
Well, first of all, Carlos, I'll bet somebody at that tournament got their ass chewed royally to put him in that position. I don't think that was scheduled. You know, I think that was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, and I think he kind of got blindsided by that because he would have been ready, and he was clearly not ready. He even said that he hadn't taken any warm-up shots or anything. So I'll bet Mark Steinberg has just reamed somebody over that deal. And then to get the press play that it got, I don't get that whole thing. I can't believe Tiger put himself in that position. He never has done that in the past. So that really, that whole thing really surprises me in the first place. Second of all, he's not ready to come back. You know, that's clear. You know, we saw him take some full swings a few weeks ago. You know, that's okay. That's not like the grind of playing on the PGA Tour, walking up and down hills, traveling in airplanes, sleeping in strange beds, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we yet to have to see that, whether that's going to really happen or not. So, to answer your, you know, we talked about this, Mark and I talked about this morning on his show, Desert Southwest Golf Show, that he really thinks that Tiger is done. We're not seeing him back winning. We're not going to see him do well on tour. He's going to miss cuts. I'm a little bit the other way, Carlos. I'm a very big Tiger Woods fan. I really want to see him come back and do well and compete at a high level. You know, he has stated that he still feels Sam Snead's record is attainable. He still feels that Jack's record is attainable, the 18 majors. So, you know, it would make a great movie, you know, if he came back and got that done. It would only enhance the movie, that's for sure. I could see the scenes in my head now. I could write the screenplay. Will he come back and win? Yes, I think he will come back and win. Will he win majors? I wouldn't be surprised if he won a major too. I don't think he's going to get to Jack's record, but he's only 40 years old. I know that sounds old, 40 years old, when you got these guys that are 22, 23, 25 winning majors now. But, you know, he's a physical specimen. You know, if he can get his back healed up and his knees to cooperate for a while, for a couple years, he could run off some pretty good stuff. I mean, we all know how much he wants to win. Now, the third point, Carlos, that you make is a really good one. And where is he at mentally? Does he still have the mental capability to win? You know, he felt before he deserved to win, he was going to win, and everybody was playing for second place. I don't think he feels that right now. I think he feels, you know, a little intrepidation. You know, I think with the rehab stuff and he did and the personal problems, I think it's taken a toll on him mentally. So, you know, can he mentally do it? That may be a bigger question than the physical question. I kind of rambled on there a little bit, Carlos, but that's where I'm thinking right now.
That's what I wanted, I mean, to elaborate a little bit on this, because I know it's gotten a lot of press, and I'm sure, like you mentioned, that this wasn't staged. He didn't take any warm-up swings. He wasn't ready for it. But for him to seem go for it, and then what really got me is what he said. It was like, come on, Tiger. You know, it was like he was frustrated that he couldn't get the first two on. And you got to make this third one, man. You got to make it. It was like, just put it in the green. And that mental part, to me, is the one that really worries me about him. I know that he will make physical fitness back to the shape that he has to do. He's certainly not ready to play, but they shouldn't have done that, really. It was painful to watch him struggle that way. It's just struggle that way, the way that he said it that way was the one that was the thing that got me. When he went like, come on, Tiger. That really was painful. But anyway, hopefully he will get back. Like you, I'm a very big fan of him. Hopefully he can get back and come and win. I don't know how many majors he would be able to win. At least I hope he wins one more. But I wanted to see him compete and compete against this young guys that are right now, Jason Bay, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler. I want to see him toe-to-toe with them at full swing and full speed. So hopefully it'll happen sooner rather than later. Well, we went a little bit more there, but let's take a short break. And when we come back, we have our VIG, Ron Green Jr. Very interesting talk that we had with him. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. He's a good friend of the show, Global Golf Post senior writer Ron Green Jr. He joined us to talk about the article he published on the Global Golf Post yesterday in his section, The Take, where he opens it up by saying, the big three is so yesterday. Basically, he places Day as the solid number one and away from the so-called new big three in golf. So, Fred, some words before we go to the second.
Yeah, as we documented on the backspin section earlier in the show, we saw just about everything at this year's Players' Championship. Record-setting low scoring on Thursday and Friday, and nearly impossible playing conditions on Saturday. So Ron Green Jr. spent the entire week there covering it for Global Golf Post and was kind enough to talk to us about the tournament and Jason Day on his drive home yesterday from Jacksonville back to Charlotte. So very informative, very interesting. Ron is so knowledgeable. He's out there on tour. Following, he's been doing it for years. He knows all the ins and outs and everything about it, and it's always great to have him on the show.
Let's play it.
We are very happy to welcome back Ron Green Jr. to the Back Nine Report. He covered the Players' Championship this past weekend for the Global Golf Post, and his thoughts on Jason Day's huge win can be viewed in this week's issue. Ron, hello and welcome again to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Ron, I know you're driving home from Jacksonville, Hunter Vedra, this morning. You got to spend a week at the Players' Championship. It was quite a tournament.
Yeah, it was. I mean, from day to day, from the 63s early in the week to the whatever it was we want to call it that happened Saturday, and then sort of see Jason Day finish it off the way he did Sunday. I mean, there was no shortage of storylines at all.
And you mentioned in your piece is that even though Jason Day has separated himself from Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, you know, he's not looking down from his high perch. He's looking up. I mean, he's widening the gap as number one, working hard. He wants to earn Hall of Fame credentials. He even embraces the Tiger and Phil's records and he's setting them as his targets. Pretty big aspirations, don't you think?
He's not afraid to look at the stars and sort of reach for them. What he's done the past 10 months, the way he sort of gradually improved over the course of his career and then just sort of gone into hyper speed or whatever this last year or so since last summer. I mean, he just, there's a look about him when he's out there and he gets going. It's just sort of like a Terminator. You don't see him getting beat much when he gets sort of in that mode. He jumped out to the big lead after 36 holes and then did what he had to do to keep it there over the weekend. And I mean, as we go into the summer and with Memorial with the U.S. Open coming up and everything, I mean, he's clearly the guy right now in golf.
You mentioned Tiger, and, you know, with his commanding early lead, Jason seems to be taking a page right out of Tiger's playbook. Jump on the competition early and then just keep your foot on their throat, create a large enough lead early and make them believe everyone else is playing for second place. Do you see that a little bit?
Well, I think when he's been able to jump out of those leads, yeah, I think they definitely get that sense, get that feeling. You know, he's made no secret of his relationship with Tiger and how they've traded texts, picked Tiger's brain, asking for advice on how to handle certain situations, and Tiger's offered some thoughts, and he's used it and helped himself. But you have to be able to go shoot 63 on Thursday at the Stadium Course to do what he's done. But, I mean, he did it last year at BMW. He did it again at Arnold Palmer this year back in March. When he gets going, and Jordan Spieth was saying it was like he was birdieing every other hole, and he almost literally was there for the first 2 days. I would think it's demoralizing to the other guys. Spieth was talking about the frustration because he can't make any birdies, and he's watching Jason Day, one of his two biggest rivals, just take the golf course and do with it what he wanted. That's where he is right now, and nobody else is able to match that.
He's among the leaders in driving distance and putting stats, so that's a pretty good combination. And, you know, he has probably right now, if not the best, one of the top five best short games on tour. But unlike Tiger, when Jason seems to miss a fairway, it isn't by that much. He's really consistent with that big stick.
Yeah, I mean, when he gets hit it really well with his driver, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's beautiful to watch. He missed it a few places at the Players last week, even with his 2-iron. He wasn't as accurate as he wanted to be, but terribly penalizing for him. But, yeah, he's done a great job, as they like to say, keeping it in front of him. Doesn't have to play from big, big misses very often. And he had a couple times where he got it in bad spots and had some tough pitch shots. He's one of the best drivers, if not the best driver of the ball. Now his short game is up there as good as anybody. And he's in one of those places where when he's standing over a 10-footer, you just expect him to make it. And especially the ones you need to sort of keep to hold rounds together. He was talking about the one he had to make for the bogey at 9 yesterday when it was sort of starting to get away from him. And just sort of stabilize things. And we've seen Tiger, we've seen Jordan, and those guys do it when they're at the top of their games. They can plug the holes when they pop up.
With the time that he spends on practice, he's a very hard worker. Plus, he has to satisfy the media and sponsors. He still seems to find adequate time for his family and seems to be very committed to them.
Absolutely. I think we've gotten to see a lot of his family because he likes having them around. I mean, they travel together. They have an RV they stay in. Loves talking about his kids. I mean, it's a part of who he is. And he's talked about trying to find that balance and understanding their media obligations, their sponsor obligations. There's time he wants to put in working on his physical fitness. There's time whether he needs to spend an extra hour on a short game or hitting more tee shots, whatever, with Colin Swatton and his team. They've done a really good job of finding the balance and got to be willing to make the commitment to do all the things to get where he is. And he was talking after he won yesterday about how he's motivated to continue doing those things. He doesn't want to just enjoy where he is. He wants to widen the gap, and he's willing to do what it takes, he said.
Now that you mentioned that he's committed to widening the gap, you know, with Spieth and McIlroy now seemingly falling a little behind there, do you think that will motivate them to get back into contention with him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think they've both talked about it. Rory said earlier this year that when it was most of the conversation was on Day and Spieth, that he didn't want to be left out of that conversation. He can play good rounds, but he can't play complete tournaments, and that's gotten in his way. I mean, Jordan is just going through what feels like an inevitable sort of dip a little bit from where he was because there's no way he was going to sustain what he did last year, you wouldn't think. So I think he's totally fine. I mean, he was 9 holes from winning the Masters for a second straight year. Obviously, it sort of came apart when in there, but I think now that he gets back in Texas, maybe it was interesting to hear him talk about the pressure he's put on himself and the expectations and feeling tense on the golf course and understanding that he needs to release the pressure valve a little bit on himself. Pretty accurate, I think, as we look toward the U.S. Open. The way he plays and the strengths of his game, I think, suit him beautifully at the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And I expect to see him do something big really soon.
Seen over the last several months, Rory's play being pretty spotty. He can't seem to really turn it up, you know, when he really wants to. I know we've seen him when he's driving it well. That really seems to pique his interest, and he's able to go low and really play at a high level. But he just hasn't seemed to have that gear here over the last several tournaments.
No, and he's mentioned Sunday when he was finished, he talked about the frustration he's feeling. He hadn't won anywhere since, I think, November. I mean, it's been over a year since he's won on a PGA Tour. And he's been around the lead a good bit, but he hadn't been able to finish it off. And it's sort of like he plays one good day, one flat day, one good day, one flat day. When he had chances, like at the Masters on the weekend I guess it was Saturday when he played with Jordan Spieth, and he ends up shooting 77 and play his way out instead of into chance to win. other places. I mean, he couldn't get it done, had a bad day Saturday, as a lot of guys did at the Players' Championship. And now he's off to the Irish Open, where maybe he gets it going there. He said, every week I get to these tournaments and I say the same things. I'm close. I feel like it's about to happen. And every week when it's over, I say it. I'm saying the same thing. I still feel close, but it's just not getting it done. So, I think there is sort of a sense of urgency for him. I think he's like a handful of those guys. I mean, it's the major championships that really drive him, and he knows what's coming up and the summer that's ahead and getting here in a hurry and wants to sort of find what's missing.
Let's talk a little bit about TPC Sawgrass. That always is one of the big storylines at the Players' Championship. Jason Day set a new 36-hole record with his 63-66 at 1,500 par through 36 holes. You had, along with Jason, you had Rory and Colt Knost flirting with course records over the first two rounds. But Saturday's third round was a little bit different. The wind was up, very sunny, low humidity. Even rumored they had even ran the sub-air fans a little bit on Friday night. Was the PGA Tour staff trying to get even with the best players in the world for shooting those low numbers on Saturday?
I don't know if it was trying to get even, but I think they didn't want Greg Norman's 2,400 par record to be in any danger, and they made sure of that. I know they said that they were surprised by the lack of humidity and the breeze, but perfectly sunny skies, although why they were surprises me, because that was the weather forecast and everybody knew what was coming, and they were double cutting and double rolling the greens every morning and every evening and wanted to have them fast. And as we know, they've had issues down there with the putting surfaces, which is why on Tuesday they're tearing them up and starting over, putting new grass on them. But I mean, that was, as one of the players said, the change from Friday to Saturday felt very artificial, whatever they did. I mean, it was just it turned out to be really unfortunate. I mean, it just, you could argue it's fair, but they all had to deal with it. But they had pins and spots you couldn't get to on crowns, and there's just no grass there to slow the ball down. That's what players kept talking about. Said you just hit it, and it's just nothing to stop it. Even just putting your putter down, slowing your putter became an issue because it would sort of slide across the surface. There was nothing much there, and I think it was Ian Poulter called it TPC Shinnecock. It was reminiscent of the day at the U.S. Open all those years ago when the golf course, the greens got away from. Yeah, I think the tour was really embarrassed by what happened and got it back Sunday as best they could, and the scores were much more reasonable. Guys were able to get hit putts and be a little more aggressive. I mean, they were all playing just complete defense on the green Saturday, just trying their best to get finished without just shooting 100.
It's no secret that the Players has the strongest field of any tournament. They have one of the largest purses. Two questions come to mind. McIlroy's less than stellar performance, as well as Spieth, plus Fowler missing the cut, does that add more significance to Day's amazing performance and win it last week at the TPC Sawgrass?
Well, I think that's a golf tournament, a golf course in particular, that different things kind of happen. I mean, we've heard Phil Mickelson say, I can't believe I actually won here. I mean, he's missed four straight cuts there. A lot of guys come there, and if you're a little bit off, it puts you in positions where it's really hard to recover, and it's easy to make a big one. There's sort of a wild card feel to that tournament, I think. When guys are on, they can really go. It was an interesting leaderboard behind Jason Day because as you're looking at it going into Sunday, and he's got the lead there, and you're wondering who's going to chase him down. And there was no real name that sort of jumped out at you. I mean, maybe Matsuyama, who looked really, really nervous early and played his way out of contention immediately. But, I mean, you got Alex Shakey, you got Colt Knost, you got Kevin Chappell, who's still trying to win his first tournament, guys like that. And then you had Jason Day, who's done pretty much everything. And there was a feeling all day long of how this thing was going to end, although it got a little closer than it might have. Another resounding performance by Jason Day, just reconfirming what we've already known. He has sort of separated himself from everyone else right now.
Talking about this, we had Bill Hughes, the GM there for TPC last week, and he made a statement to us that maybe the Players is separate, but not equal to a major. He says that it shouldn't be classified as such. It can stand alone in itself. You know, it has the biggest purse, the best field, and incredible course. The only thing that is lacking is history and time. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't think it's a major, but I think it's great at being what it is. I mean, it's I don't know if unique is the right word, but it's carved out its own place in the game and in the sport. I mean, it's you've got a golf course that people know and recognize, and even casual golf fans or non-golf fans recognize the 17th hole. I think it's got a great history going back years and years. I mean, they've been playing there, whatever, 34 years or something now. I mean, people remember what happened, whether it was Ricky Fowler or Freddie years ago or that shot Davis Love hit to win, Craig Perk stuff. I mean, it's a really good tournament. The field, all the things when it's played, it's just I really like it. I think the players – It gets special consideration when you're evaluating what players have done through the years. And, I mean, that's why Jason Day, he talked about it. He said maybe it's what pushes him over Hall of Fame consideration-wise on down the road years from now. I think the way he's going, I think he's going to have more than he needs on his resume for that. But, yeah, it's just a terrific thing. It's not one of the four majors, but it's the next best thing.
I happened to watch the Jason Day video of his journey to make it as a youngster again this morning, and he had that tremendous desire to succeed, and the commitment to outwork everyone else is the thing that I took away from that video this time, and he still seems to have that work ethic and that desire, even though he's reached number one. Is you know he wants to just keep adding to his resume.
Yeah, I mean, his words is not enough. He said, you know, I've got 10 wins, but 10's not enough for me. He said more than one time in his press conference last night that it's all about the motivation and wanting to expand his lead between 1 and 2 and to do what it takes and to keep going and to build on this. I mean, this has been a long time coming, and he wants to just ride it and push it as far as he can. And there'll come a time when priorities have to shift a little bit, but right now, he is just full speed ahead.
You know, he has won 7 of the last 17 starts that he has made. And he was asked, what's the difference since then in his game? He said that it was because he just wanted more than he ever wanted it before. Do you think, like, he's going to keep this rolling, or will he hit a wall? What is his ceiling? Where do you see him?
Well, I mean, in some ways, what we've seen with him since last year is not unlike the role we saw Rory McIlroy get on there for a time, I guess, in 14. And then look at the year Jordan Spieth had last year, and we were talking about him similarly. So, guys get in spells like this once in a while. Can he keep it going? I mean, it'd be fun to see. The only guy who's kept it going for any really long period of time is Tiger. And basically what Jason Day has done for almost a year is what Tiger did for 10, 12 years. So, I don't think anybody foresees him going with something like that. But I think there's no reason to think it's going to stop anytime soon. But it will change at some point.
We've been talking with Ron Green, Jr., senior writer for Global Golf Post, who spent the week at the Players. And, Ron, we want to certainly thank you for taking time to come on and talk to us again. And we look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Thanks, guys. I enjoyed it.
There you have it. That was Ron Green Jr. talking a little bit about his article and a lot more there about the Players. And, Fred, that begs the question for us to dig a little bit deeper on that subject, whether Jason Day has already separated himself as the solid number one and step away from what it's being called the new big three. And I would have to say, to me, right now, I don't see it that way, because it's hard to fathom yet that there's a big three. Let's start from that perspective. And it was like 2 years ago we had Rory McIlroy dominating the scene. Last year was Jordan Spieth. The past 10 months it's been Jason Day. Seems like this is going to be his year. So to me, for first of all, to be a Big Three, there has to be like a continuity from them exchanging tournaments throughout a period of time. And right now, the guy of the moment is Jason Day. Definitely, he's the guy. And I texted you on Saturday or Sunday. I don't know which one was of the two of the days that I told you. It reminds me a lot, and it was mentioned there in the interview, that it reminds me a lot of Tiger Woods. I think that he's the one that more resembles, by the way he plays, the attitude that he has, and the tools that you can see from him. He's more of those three, the one that resembles me more like Tiger. And but to me right now, I don't even consider there's a Big Three. There are three dominant players, but not like a Big Three like the previous ones. And right now, to me, yes, Jason Day is the man of the moment, but that's how I see it. How do you see that part?
Well, to answer your question, right now, Jason Day has separated himself from Rory and Jordan. But last year, prior to the PGA Championship, Jordan Spieth had burst onto the scene and surpassed Rory, who had kind of taken charge in 2014. He had a terrible 2013. You know, he had broken up with his girlfriend, changed clubs, all that stuff. But in 14, he bounced back, had a great year, and he was the guy. But then Jordan came on and did his thing last year, and now Jason Day has reached his stride, and the win at the PGA Championship has just set him on a whole new course with the confidence. And, Carlos, we keep coming back to this thing about confidence. And, you know, with Jason Day right now, He's not worried about making a check this week. He's not worried about where his next buck's coming from. He's simply focused on winning. And he feels like when he shows up on Tuesday or Wednesday of tournament week, that he's the guy to beat. Everybody else is playing for second place. I mean, he truly has that mindset. So, you know, his only competitors now are Tiger Woods' past and Phil Mickelson's past and, you know, the records of former great golfers. You know, he's playing for his place in history. So from that standpoint, he has separated himself right now. But, Carlos, your point, you know, with those three guys, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Jason Day, I really do think it's kind of a Big Three thing. I just don't think we've had enough history with them yet. As so many things, it comes down to time. You know, it took a 6 or 7, 8 year period for Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson and Sam Snead to take turns winning major championships for it to be their era. It took time for Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer to take turns winning championships or beating each other, winning majors to set that era. You know, Tiger was an era all to himself from 1997 to 2009. So, you know, I think we're seeing the very beginning of this thing. I think we're just a year or so into it. We just started talking about it last year a little bit. So I really think the future is bright. Now, as we always do, there's a bunch of young guys coming that could, you know, if they have the desire to work hard enough and want to face the bright lights and the pressure that goes along with being one of the best golfers in the world, then there's three or four guys right below there that have the ability to jump up into that group. But for right now and for the next 2 or 3 or 5 years, I really think Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth are going to take turns winning majors, and I think it could start as early as the U.S. Open coming up here in just a few weeks, Carlos.
That's the next major stuff that we want to see, what happens, how Jordan Spieth bounces back and see if he can defend his title. Jason Day, definitely the hottest player on the planet, the number one right now, and Rory McIlroy, he's just a tweak or two away from just being on top again. I mean, he hasn't played that bad. It's like he has this one bad round every tournament that he just can. And he's just trying so hard. You can see it in his body language that he's just frustrated every time he has that kind of a bad round. And if he gets it together, I mean, this is going to be, like you said, it's going to be interesting times to come. And definitely a future is bright with those three on top of golf right now. Well, let's move on now to our final putt. And I'm going to start talking about, you know, even though Sergio Garcia made me look super bad again, you know, with his terrible performance and what he calls his favorite PGA Tour event. You know, a good thing happened there because his foundation sponsored an AGA tournament last weekend at Orange County National Golf Center and lodge near Orlando, Florida. He spent time engaging the field of youngsters after Saturday's round. He gave a clinic, answered questions, and signed autographs. If that wasn't enough, he returned on Sunday and spent after the afternoon roaming the course, talking to competitors, and ultimately handing out the hard-earned hardware. Clearly, he took his sponsorship seriously, and the kids will never forget it. He's always been a very giving person to the community, and he showed right there. One thing, though, I cannot let go is, and I have to mention it, something about the Olympics. I mean, while several professionals around the world have begged of the Olympics, he's excited about the possibility for playing for his native Spain this summer in Brazil. He said, and I quote, "I am extremely excited to have a chance to be part of the Olympics, to be able to represent your country. I don't want to let that chance go by. If I manage to win a medal, that would be amazing." End of quote. See the recurring theme here, players bowing out of the biggest events in sports? It's not about the me, it's about the country. That's the recurring thing. But anyway, oh yeah, and he also mentioned that after the Olympics, he will then point to that other international golf competition of some repute. I think it's called the Ryder Cup. So that's the other thing he has. But anyway, on another note, Benny Ann, who has been coming on his own at the European Tour, has joined the PGA Tour as a special temporary member for the remainder of the 2015-16 PGA Tour season as a special temporary member. And is eligible for unlimited sponsor extensions for the remainder of the season, and he attempts to earn his 2016-17 PGA Tour card through the non-member money list or non-member FedEx Cup points list through the Wyndham Championship. And he's almost secure that because he earned 245 points his last time out, and that was more than enough for last year, the one that arrived in 125, so he's almost certain to have his PGA Tour card. On the 2015-16 season, he has two top 10 finishes, which five made cuts and seven starts. Fred, he's currently number 24 on the official World Golf Rankings, and he's one of the youngsters from the European Tour that we have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, we've been talking about Benny Ahn for a couple years, it seems like. He did really well on the European Tour and is finding his way, like so many guys have before him, finding his way to the PGA Tour. Hey, Carlos, some high-profile golfers, Padraig Harrington, Retief Goosen, and Ian Woosnam, are the latest athletes linked to the Panama Papers, which detail efforts by wealthy people across the world to try to hide their fortunes by investing in offshore companies. According to a report in the Irish Times, these three golfers' names have all appeared in documents obtained from Panamanian law firm Mossack Fonseca, which says its records were hacked. The firm specializes in setting up offshore accounts, which are difficult to trace. The Times reports that the firm set up the accounts at the request of IMG, a talent agency that represents many pro athletes. The information was found in documents obtained from the law firm and detailed basic corporate information about the company's trusts and foundations set up in 21 jurisdictions across the world from Hong Kong to Nevada. Hey, Carlos, did you see the video of English golfer Greg Owen wading into the water at TPC Sawgrass to save a baby bird that had tried to fly but got caught in the water? Owen stripped to his underwear and bravely waded out to the young bird and brought it back to the safety of the fairway. The little bird would not leave his side, so he moved it to a hollow of a tree bordering the fairway. So hopefully it survived and can fly once more. The USGA is reporting that it is completely sold out of tickets for Saturday's third round of the U.S. Open at Oakmont. If you're holding out to purchase your tickets, it's too late, Carlos. Presence of Indian artifacts are now hindering construction of Herb Kohler's new course in Wisconsin. An abundance of Indian artifacts have been found on the site of what Herb Kohler wants to be his newest golf course in Wilson, Wisconsin, just south of Kohler. The proposed new course would sit on land that has been owned by the Kohler family for over 75 years along the shoreline of... Kohler family has owned for 75 years along the shoreline of Lake Michigan. Wilson residents have been fighting Kohler at every turn to stop completion of the project, and they are now playing on the sympathy of historical buffs to pick up the fight. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has not yet completed the environmental impact statement. The DNR said it doesn't know when it will release a report, which typically includes analysis of environmental and historical information. And lastly, Carlos, a report was out this morning that around 7:30 last night, two vandals on ATVs made a complete mess of the 14th green at the Golf Club of Houston, site of this week's Shell Houston Open. They slid the machines and ditch figure eights to leave deep ruts and ruin the turf on the green. With the pictures that I saw, if the greens crew can get this thing in shape in a couple of days, they're going to deserve some kind of a medal, Carlos, and that's all I have for tonight.
And that will wrap up another week of the Batman Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, the good friend of the show, senior golf, Global Golf Post writer, Ron Green Jr. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.